Hi, David here, and welcome back to the channel, looking at the automatic writings of the early 20th century medium, James Paget. In the last video, we looked at a message that Paget received from his father, putting in place arrangements for the development of Paget's mediumship, together with a further message from his father, John, on September 14, 1914. If you've watched that video or listened to the podcast, you'll recall that John Paget told his son that an earlier message he received from a spirit identifying himself as Jesus was in fact true. As we saw, Paget didn't believe this and simply discarded the message from the spirit calling himself Jesus. So this message from his father presents him with a bit of a challenge. In this video, we're going to look at a message Paget received from his mother, Anne Paget, on September 15, 1914, the very next evening after that message from his father, and then a slightly longer one from his wife, Helen, a few weeks later. So to begin with the message from Anne Paget, I am here, your mother. You are the best son in the world. Well, mothers and sons, what can you say? At this point, Paget seems to ask his mother if she's often with him, which is a question pretty much everyone asks about their people in spirit. Yes, I am often with you. Try to give me more of your heart, and you will feel that I am with you even more. Paget then asks what it's like for his mother in spirit. She tells him, I have a home and live with a spirit that is in the same progression as myself. We are very happy together, and she is the soulmate of your father. Now, if your parents are in spirit, and you are lucky enough to receive a message from them through a medium, that's not the kind of thing you get told every day. Paget's mother Anne has a home, which she shares with someone else. Now, people in spirit describing their homes is nothing new, nor is sharing a home for the sake of companionship. The unexpected news here is that the woman Anne shares her home with is the soulmate of her earthly husband, Paget's father. So whatever relationship Anne may have had with John Paget by virtue of their marriage when they were here on earth, that relationship is now very much changed, now that they are both in spirit. At this point, Paget asks whether his mother knows of or is with her soulmate, whoever that might be. She replies, no, I am not with my soulmate. He is not in the same sphere with me. He is in the one with your father, and he is progressing too. So the two men who are soulmates to Anne Paget and her housemate are at a different level in spirit. Curious, Paget asks his mother whether she knew her soulmate socially when on earth. She replies, no, I did not know him on the earth and only met him when he came to the spirit world. He was living in the city of Chicago and was a very wealthy man, but a very great sinner. He is now in a state of progression and will be with me soon. So Anne makes it clear that her soulmate is not so advanced spiritually, although she does say that he is making progress. He seems to have been a typical example of a wealthy but unscrupulous man, even if he is no longer like that. This also tells us that Paget's father is not as spiritually advanced as his mother, because she has already told us that the two men are in the same sphere. However, they are both making progress, and as we saw from the message discussed in the last video, John Paget is sufficiently advanced to play a key role in his son's mediumistic development. So already we have a picture building up of spirit as a place or of different environments where it is possible to make progress in terms of the kind of person you are, which is, of course, equally possible in this world. Anne Padgett reinforces this by saying, "I do not believe in eternal punishment. It is a false teaching of the Orthodox Church." Now, when Anne Padgett says Orthodox with a small o, she's not referring to the Orthodox churches of the Mediterranean and Eastern Europe, such as the Greek or Russian Orthodox Church. She simply means Orthodox in the sense of traditional or mainstream. So what she's referring to is the old teaching of eternal punishment or damnation that has often formed a part of Christian doctrine across the different churches, whether capital O Orthodox, Roman Catholic or Protestant. Having passed to spirit, Anne Padgett clearly sees that this teaching of eternal damnation does not describe what happens there. She goes on to say that Jesus is the same as I believed him to be on earth, but I do not worship him as God. He is not God, but a spirit of the greatest perfection and goodness. So Padgett's mother tells him much the same as his father, saying that the traditional Christian doctrine of the Trinity, that Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit, and God the Father, or three persons in one Godhead, is simply not accurate. How does she know this? Speaking again of Jesus, Anne says, "He is with me quite often. He talked to you on Saturday night, and he will come to you again very soon and explain the true teaching of the Bible. Let him be your friend and advisor. You must go to bed. Good night, my son. Your mother." So Padgett's mother presents him with exactly the same challenge and dilemma as his father did the previous evening. Does Padgett simply disbelieve this message and ignore it? What then would he do with all the other messages he's received in the months leading up to this point? Are they to be relied on? If so, why not this one? What's getting in the way, of course, is Padgett's expectations. In particular, the traditional view of who and what Jesus is that Padgett had been taught and brought up with. For someone with that perspective, it seems impossible that Jesus would be personally communicating through a medium. Yet, if Padgett's mother and father are correct, that Jesus is not God, but a human spirit, albeit a very highly developed one, it becomes possible for Padgett to contemplate the possibility that the message he received from the person identifying as Jesus might have been reliable after all, or that this is at least not impossible. Also, if traditional Christian doctrines based upon the Bible, such as the Trinity and eternal damnation, can be so far wide of the mark, you might expect the person whose life was so central to the stories of the New Testament to seek the opportunity to correct things. On the other hand, you might ask why setting the record straight would take so long. So Padgett still has his doubts, hence his mother's encouragement to let Jesus be his friend and advisor. He relies on that encouragement enough to persevere with the messages. The next message I want to take you through in this video is one Padgett received a couple of weeks later from his wife Helen. In a message dated 16 November 1914, just the evening after the one from Anne that we've just looked at, Helen tells Padgett that she will soon progress from the second sphere to the third sphere, and that she would tell him all about it when she arrived there. And she does, in a message just 2 weeks later, on November 30th, 1914. "I am here, Helen. I am very happy for I have so much of God's love in my heart that I cannot think of anything that tends to make me unhappy. So again, we see Helen telling us that God's love is something central to spiritual progress and a state of happiness in spirit, although at this stage we don't yet have a clear picture of exactly what it is that Helen is indicating with the phrase God's love. Is it just a state of mind that can be learned, or is it something external that can be participated or shared in? Anyway, Helen continues with a description of her home in spirit. My home is very beautiful, and I am perfectly delighted with it. It is made of white marble and is surrounded by lawns and flowers and trees of various kinds. The grass is so very green, and the flowers are so beautiful and variegated. The trees are always in foliage and have such beautiful limbs and leaves. I am most pleased with my home, I mean the building. There are many beautiful pictures on the walls, and the walls are all frescoed and hung with fine coverings, and the floors are inlaid with beautiful mosaics, and I have all the splendid furniture that I could possibly wish for. My library is full of books of all kinds, especially those that tell of God and his love for humanity. You would be in your element if you could be with me. It is permanent, and the house and trees and flowers are more real to me than were ever the houses and trees and flowers on earth. They are not shadowy, as you may think, but are so very substantial that they never decay or grow old. Now, I don't know about you, but this is all sounds a bit too good to be true. I can't imagine there are many people upon this earth who would pass up the chance to enjoy a home like this. That said, this description is consistent with many other descriptions I have come across in spiritualist literature. Just don't go assuming everyone in spirit walks into a house like this. Our true nature, or degree of spiritual development, is reflected not only in the spiritual appearance the soul projects, but also in the possibilities available to us in terms of our surrounding environment. There are people who earn themselves miserable hovels through their conduct during their time upon the earth plane. But what Helen is doing here is showing Paget what can be earned by paying attention to our spiritual development. Like the vast majority of people passing to spirit from this world, Helen began in what she calls the second sphere, often called the Summerlands in spiritualist texts. Through her own spiritual development, Helen has progressed to the third sphere. Also, Helen's comments about her home being real, substantial, permanent, and not shadowy are interesting. Folk tales about spirits and ghosts tend to contemplate shadowy creatures that can pass through walls. But people in spirit consistently tell us that their environment is experienced as solid and real, more so than even the earth environment is to us. Helen goes on to say, I have music such as you have never heard on earth, and instruments of various kinds, which I am learning to play, and I sing with all my heart and soul as the days go by. I have beds on which I lie down, but I never sleep. We do not need sleep here. We only rest, for sometimes we get tired from our work and are greatly refreshed by lying on the beds and couches, which are so comfortable that we do not realise that we are tired after lying down just a little while. The one obvious thing that distinguishes people in spirit from us folks upon the earth is that they no longer have a physical form, so their lives are not driven by its needs and rhythms, such as needing to eat and sleep. I recall my own dad telling me years ago that you don't sleep in spirit. Instead, you just lie down and take a rest when you need to, or do whatever else lets you recharge your batteries, so to speak. One thing I've often wondered about is that people in spirit sometimes seem to continue the habit of eating or taking some sort of nourishment. And I'm always curious as to whether that's something done out of social habit for recreation or whether it does involve some other process that makes you feel better. In this message, Helen continues, we eat fruit and nuts, or rather imbibe their essences, but do not do so because we are hungry, but more because we enjoy the flavours so much. And we drink water, pure and sweet, as it makes us feel so refreshed when we are a little tired. And you can tell Padgett asks a question in response to this, because Helen continues by saying, no, our fruit is not of the earthly kind. It is so much more delightful that I am unable to describe it to you. And the nuts are different also. Yes, the water is purer than what you have and is more refreshing. And this is interesting. Helen's mention of imbibing their essences makes it clear that whatever's going on, it is not actual eating as us embodied creatures know it. Also, the foods Helen describes are not of the earthly kind. So it's starting to look as though Helen is using eating as a metaphor for some other process she's trying to describe. And this is one of the difficulties we face when we communicate with people in spirit. Earthly languages are invented to describe earthly things, including the ideas and concepts that are useful to us in understanding our environment and being able to function socially. If you try to imagine being alive in an environment where you don't have and don't need a physical form, it's obvious that's going to be a very different place and experience from what we are used to on the earth plane. Literal descriptions soon become tricky because the language quickly breaks down. Earthly languages often just don't have the words to describe somewhere so different or to point to experiences we don't have. In the final section of her message, Helen says more about spiritual development. I'm going to try to progress into the higher planes and hope to do so as rapidly as is possible. And you may rest assured that no matter what plane I may be in, my love for you will not lessen, and I will not cease to be with you as I now am. You can progress on earth just as rapidly as I can here, if you will let God's love come into your heart as fully and as abundantly as I do. And you can, if only you will pray. God does not require the child of his care to be in the spirit world in order to develop his soul. You have the same soul now that you will have when you come here. And if you let God fill it with his love while you are on earth, why should it not progress as much as it does here? The love of God coming into the soul of a human does not depend upon whether he is in the flesh or in the spirit. All souls must answer for the sins done in the body, although it is not necessary that such penalties be paid in the spirit world. You can pay the penalty while on earth. As you sow, so shall you reap. But the reaping is not necessarily here. If you seek earnestly for God's love and grace, you can obtain them on the earth. And I am informed that when they are obtained on earth, greater will be the progress of the Spirit when it comes over. So let me pray that you seek these blessings while you are in your present life, and not wait for them to be given to you after you have entered the Spirit world. You are now on the way to obtain these blessings, and I pray that you may continue, for you cannot find true happiness in any other way. So try to become more spiritual so that you may learn the wonderful teachings of God's love and truth that he will give you. You must stop writing now, as you are tired, and so am I. So pray to God for his love and spiritual enlightenment. Helen. I'm not going to say a lot on that because I think it's worth going over Helen's words for yourself. As always, I'll put the audio file on Podbean and the transcript of today's video on my Medium account. So use those if that's easier for you. The links are in the video description. The only two points I'm going to pick out are, first, Helen's reminder that where we go to in spirit is a place we are suited to in terms of our own spiritual development. And secondly, her further mention of God's love as something that can fill the soul. And it's very clear from Helen's words that these two are closely connected. And this is something that we'll learn much more about in future videos. In the next video, we're going to take a look at two more messages from Helen and Anne Padgett on the 4th and 5th of December, 1914. Helen's message is an interesting one about communication with spirit in dream state. And Anne's message gives us an interesting example of someone who was a religious teacher during their earthly career and is now looking for the opportunity to correct what they taught. So I hope you'll join me for that. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed this video, like it and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already, as it does help to introduce it to others who might be interested. In the meantime, thank you for watching, and I'll see you soon. Take care.